Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you very much to Bnei Ashurin for hosting the shiur. So the topic today is, on the one hand, it's somewhere between a shiur and a lecture, in the sense that there's a lot of history we're going to be speaking about, but at least for me, understanding the history of the Rishonim is something that not only gives a perspective to the learning that we do, but it enriches it in a way that's really hard to exaggerate how much it can enrich a person's learning. When a person feels connected to the names, it's not just a couple of Svarim being mentioned, random names that we don't know how they're connected, but the more that we relate to them, we understand who's speaking to who. So at least for myself, I see this type of limud as something that's very, I wouldn't even call it a hechsher mitzvah, but very much part and parcel of what we do in the Beis Medrash. There is a fascinating comment by one of the commentators in Nach, where he, in the beginning, one of the Pirkei Tehillim that goes through the history of Klal Yisrael, he says that when history is studied properly, so it itself is part of Limud HaTorah. So with that in mind, I'd like to speak a little bit tonight about the Ashkenazic Rishonim and the Ashkenazic culture of Gemara learning. And really, that starts with Rashi. But to understand the context of Rashi, at least for our learning, we need to go back a little bit before Rashi, and that is to Rabbeinu Gershom, who is really, in a certain sense, the forefather of the Ashkenazic community. Whenever we speak about Ashkenaz, we're really speaking about the communities that developed in the Rhine River Valley in Germany. Let's say, for now, in the 800s, 900s. I say let's say because it's unclear exactly when the Jews first came to the Rhineland. We know the Jews came to Italy from Eretz Yisrael after the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash. The famous Arch of Titus shows Jews being carried away, the Kalim of the Beis Hamikdash being carried away from Eretz Yisrael to Italy. And from Italy, so you go north, straight out of Italy, you cross over the Alps, and you get into Germany, you get into France. Why would the Jews leave Italy and go off into what at that time was considered the wilderness? Well, first of all, the Roman Empire at a certain point became Christian. And when you have a lot of Fabrenta Christians who just became Christian, so you want to get out of the center of the country. You want to go off to the periphery. And the Jews also were always looking for economic opportunities. So the Jews went up the Rhine River and they settled in the Rhine Valley. We have records of Jews being there in the 400s, which is towards the end of the collapse of the Roman Empire. We have Jews on a record of Charlemagne, who is king of the Franks and eventually rules over what's called the Holy Roman Empire. He invites Jews to come into the Rhine Valley. And the famous story that we know, which is sort of the beginning story of the developed Ashkenazic community, is when the Colonimus family was invited from Italy to come to the Rhine Valley. And the Jews set up there what's known as the Kehilot Shum. Shum, Shin Vav Mem, stands for Spira, spire. The Vav is Vermeisa, worms. And the Mem is Magensa, Mainz. Anyone whose last name is Shapiro, so you probably come from Spira. That's where the name comes from originally. So Spira, Vermeisa, and Mainz, the Kehilot Shum. And there were great yeshivas in the Kehilot Shum. And the leader of the community was Rabbeinu Gershom. He's famous for some of his takanos, polygamy, banning polygamy, not to read other people's mail, but there's a whole list of takanos of Rabbeinu Gershom. And one of the Talmidim who lived in the yeshiva of Rabbeinu Gershom, who learned in the yeshiva of Rabbeinu Gershom, was Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki, Rashi. Rashi was born in France. He travels to Germany in order to study in these great, illustrious yeshivas. And we know that he studied there because he constantly, as we read through Gemara, we see he's constantly referencing his Rebbein. He refers to Rav Yaakov ben Yakar, who was his first Rebbe. He calls him Mori HaTzedek. Mori HaZaken, excuse me. Mori HaZaken, that's his original Rebbe in the city of Mainz. Then after that Rebbe passes away, Rav Yaakov ben Yakar, he learns by Rav Yitzchak bar Yehuda, who he refers to as Mori HaZaken. So we've got the Mori Azaken and Mori Tzedek. And then after Magensa, after Mainz, Rashi goes to the city of Worms, where there's a shul nowadays that's called the Rashi Shul in Worms. And that's where he studies under Rabbi Yitzchak HaLevi, who refers to as Skan Leviya. And after studying in Germany, Rashi returns back to France and sets up a yeshiva in his hometown of Troyes, spelled Troyes, Troyes. It's south of Paris. Rav Soloveitchik apparently said a number of times that if the Rambam never would have written his Mishnah Torah, we still would have Torah. If Rashi would not have returned back to France, we would have lost all of Torah. Because a few years after Rashi left the German cities, the Crusades came to the Rhineland. The Crusades started in France, but they mostly passed over most of the French centers, and they went right to the Rhineland. And in the Rhineland, they went straight up the river from the most southern city, which was Speyer, to Vermise, to Worms, and then to Mainz, and decimated the communities there. The yeshivas were decimated. Thousands and thousands of Jews were killed. But because Rashi had gone back to France, Torah continued to survive in France. Rashi flourished there. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. He was a posek. Famously, he didn't have any sons. He had three daughters. There is a legend that his daughters wore tefillin. There are actually no sources for that. There's a woman who wrote a book, I think called Rashi's Daughters, which I don't necessarily suggest that you read the book, but she's really the strong voice pushing Rashi's Daughters. So I emailed her and asked her. She also didn't have a source. I don't think there's a known source, but this is the tradition, that the legend that people say that Rashi's Daughters wore tefillin. We do have records of certain women wearing tefillin. It's not that we don't have any records. But Rashi's daughters, we don't have any records of Rashi's daughters wearing tefillin. But Rashi's daughters, famously, Yocheved, his daughter Yocheved, she married Rabbeinu Meir. Rabbeinu Meir is quoted in Tosfos every once in a while. That's one of Rashi's son-in-laws. Another son-in-law, the husband of Miriam, his daughter Miriam, is the Rivan. And the Rivan is actually the author of Rashi on a number of Masechtas. There are a bunch of Masechtas where we have Rashi printed on the inside of the Gemara, but it's not Rashi. It's his son-in-law, the Rivan. Rashi's Perush is very interesting, and I'm sure we've all looked at Rashi's Perush. We understand a little bit of Rashi's Perush. But Rashi is really the first one to use the Dibur HaMaschil. And that was a very, very important decision by Rashi. What do I mean by that? Many of the commentaries that preceded Rashi, like Rabbeinu Chananel, even the Rabbeinu Nissim, Rabbeinu Chananel, even what's known as the Perush of Magensa, which is the Perush from the city of Mainz, where Rashi came from. And it reflected the teachings of the yeshiva in Mainz. They were summaries. Right? If anyone's learned through Rabbeinu Chananel, you know that Rabbeinu Chananel summarizes for you the sugya. He leaves out some of the major parts, some of the parts that back, a lot of the back and forth when I say major parts, and he cuts it down, he trims it down for you. But you could really read Rabbeinu Chananel without reading the Gemara. The brilliance of Rashi is that he created a Perush, but you can't study it without studying the Gemara. You have to keep one finger on the Gemara, one finger on Rashi, and you go back and forth. And by doing that, so Rashi was not replacing the Gemara, but he was augmenting the Gemara. And it allowed and it preserved the learning of the Gemara. We all know what Rashi does in his Perush. He explains hard words. He fills in the gaps. And it's important to realize that Rashi's Perush is not really Rashi. What do I mean by that? Rashi's Perush on Chumash, for instance, we know most of the time he's quoting a Tanchum, he's quoting a Sifri, he's quoting Chazal. Now, he's the editor, so he's choosing which Chazals to quote. And sometimes he'll quote a Chazal from someplace else and put it onto a location here. And that's significant, the fact that he's doing that. But Rashi's Perush on the Gemara as well is reflective of the yeshivas in Germany. That's where he was coming from. It wasn't out of a vacuum. He's teaching you how these Gemaras were studied in the yeshivas in Germany. There are many variant versions of Rashi's Perush, and it's for two reasons. There's a what we would call a higher criticism and lower criticism. One reason why we have very many variants of Rashi is because since Rashi became so popular, everyone studied Rashi. And when people had their own comments that they wanted to add, So they wrote notes on the side of the page, like many of us do today. But with time, it started to become unclear what was from Rashi and what was added by somebody else. That's one reason why we have variant texts of Rashi. The other reason is that we're told that Rashi rewrote his Perush 4 to 6 times. And therefore, in certain Masechtos, we don't know, do we have the second version? Do we have the fourth version? Do we have the fifth version? One place where we see a different version of Rashi is on the Rif. If you flip to the Rif in the back of the Gemara, you'll notice that there's Rashi on the Rif. Now, Rashi did not write a Perush on the Rif. So why is there Rashi on the Rif? Well, at a certain point, studying the Rif became very popular, especially in Sephardic lands. They studied the Rif, they studied the Rambam, and they actually stopped reading the Gemara completely because the Rif cut out a lot of what some people saw as the extra parts of the Gemara, and he took you, streamlined you right to what the Psak is, right? The Rif's famous work was known as the Halachos, and it took the Gemara and stripped it down to what's the final Halacha. Well, if you're reading Rif, and the Rif, he quotes the Gemara. It's just that he quotes segments of it. So just like the words of the Gemara are hard to understand, the Rif is equally as hard to understand. So at some point, probably an entrepreneuring printer decided that when I print the Rif, I'm going to take the parts of Rashi that correspond to the parts of the Gemara that the Rif is quoting, and I'm going to include it on the side of the page. But what's fascinating is that many times the Rashi that we have on the Rif is different than the Rashi that we have on the Gemara. Why is that? Because the printer chose a different version of Rashi than the version that we have, an earlier version perhaps. And therefore, it's interesting to compare Rashi on the Rif to our Rashi. And indeed, there are a number of sugyas. There's a famous one in the very beginning of Maseches Kiddushin, where the Rashi on the Rif adds something that we don't have. What about Rashi's script? Where does Rashi's script come from? So Rashi's script does not come from Rashi. Rashi never wrote in that script. The reason that we have this unique script called Rashi script is because the original printings were not able to make columns. So how do you differentiate between what's the main text and what's Rashi? So they had to come up with an alternate font in order to write the comments of Rashi in a different font. At a certain point, that became accepted as the rabbinic font. And therefore, many other Sfarim were printed with Rashi script, but it wasn't really Rashi. Rashi's Perush was wildly popular, and it really replaced all other Perushim that were studied. Rabbeinu Chananel, as I mentioned, Rabbeinu Nissim Gon. Rashi is a whole unique language, just one or two more points about Rashi. And when you study Rashi, you have to really start to understand and pick up his unique language that he uses. So for instance, Rashi will often begin his Perush with the word Klomar. So Klomar in Rashi means I'm going to explain the Gemara differently than what you would think from just reading the Gemara straight. Klomar. There's actually a sefer called Kol HaKlomarim VeRashi. Somebody took a sefer, and every time, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of times, that Rashi writes Klomar, the person who wrote this sefer tries to tell you what did Rashi mean when he said Klomar. Rashi will sometimes say Lekamon, and sometimes we'll say lekameh. So lekamon means I'm going to explain it much later in the Masechta. Lekameh means I'm going to explain it very soon. Like look a little bit later on the current page. So again, there's a whole language of Rashi that you have to pick up. But once you pick up on it, so it illuminates what Rashi's saying. Something that I mentioned to the guys last night, and we had a shiur in the sugya of Zimun. So Rashi uses the word kigon many times, not to mean an example, but to mean this is the interpretation. So for instance, Shabbos, Daf Lamed Daled, the Gemara says, Safek Chashecha. Rashi writes, Kigon Bein Hashmashos. Now, Bein Hashmashos is Safek Chashecha. It's not an example of Safek Chashecha. And Rashi does this in a number of locations. So for instance, in the famous sugya in Bava Metzia called Tukfa Kohen. So the Gemara there refers to a Bechor Behema Temeya. What Behema Temeya do we have a din of Bechor by? The din of Bechor is only by Behema Tehora. There's only one animal that has the din of a Bechor if it's a Behema Temeya. What's that? A Chamor. So Rashi writes, Bechor Behema Temeya, Rashi writes, Kigon Chamor. Now in modern Hebrew, Kigon means an example. It means that there's other things as well. But Rashi doesn't use the word kigon that way. So when the Gemara says there are Devarim that are omed in Berumo Shalola, what's that a reference to? Tefillah. And Rashi writes, Kigon Tefillah. So this comes up many, many times, and you really need to pick up the language of Rashi. Like, for instance, Tosfos says Inami. What does Inami mean in Tosfos when he says Inami? An additional answer. In Rashi, Inami does not mean an additional answer. So the whole language of Rashi you need to pick up. The Bali Tosfos. So Rashi had a very illustrious family, and his family members had children and students. And this was the movement called the Bali Tosfos. The Bali Tosfos really are, as they're called, Tosfos. They are an addition onto Rashi, meaning they offer a whole other layer of interpretation that Rashi does not offer us. And probably the most famous layer of interpretation is a global perspective as opposed to a local perspective. Rashi generally will explain a sugya based on how it works best in the local, in the current location. And therefore, even if it is a stira to a sugya someplace else, Rashi will give you the easiest way to read the local discussion. The Bali Tosfos, famously, how do they approach a sugya? The Marshal, the Yamshel Shlomo, the Marshal, he writes in his introduction that the Baal of to Sefer Yamshel Shlomo, that the Bali Tosfos turned the entire Talmud into a kador, into a sphere. Why? Because as opposed to reading vertically, you know, you read one page and you read the next page vertically down, they always read horizontal. When they looked at a sugya, they always analyzed that sugya in light of all the other sugyas and shas. Therefore, even if there was an explanation locally, which makes the most sense in the local discussion, if it contradicts someplace else, something someplace else, so they need to explain our current location based on the broader discussion throughout Shas. The Bali Tosfos, and that's what the Bali Tosfos, that's really the hallmark of the parish of the Bali Tosfos. V'im Tomar, V'yesh Lomar. They ask a contradiction to someplace else, and then they offered a creative distinction in order to be able to explain how the current location can work out with someplace else. The Bali Tosfos flourished in France and in Germany. Those were the two centers of the Bali Tosfos. And by extension from there, there were Bali Tosfos in England, which is an amazing thing. Right? Imagine discussing a sugya with a Rishon in English. It would probably be more Shakespearean English than our English. But in England, there were Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam in England. And some of them we know from cities like Lincoln. There was Rav Aaron of Lincoln, wasn't one of the Bali Tosfos, but is a Jew who's mentioned in Tosfos literature. We know the famous, many of us might be familiar with the famous story of the Tower of York, where Jews in York, there was a mob that started murdering Jews, and the Jews fled to the tower in the city of York, and they were surrounded. And they had with them there Rabbeinu Yom Tov of Joanne, who was a French Bal Tosfos, who had gotten a shteller, he got a job in England. And he was a Rav of the community of York in England. And they turned to him, asking him what to do. And he advised them what to do in this situation. And it was a very sad story where they took their own lives rather than fall into the hands of the Christian mob. This Rabbeinu Yom Tov of Joanne was a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. He's the author, for instance, just so that we know who we're talking about here. Many of us are familiar with Yom Kippur Davening at the end of after Shmon Esrei. So we have a number of piyutim that we sing. One of them is each stanza ends with Salachti. Salachti, Salachti. That was written by this Rabbeinu Yom Tov, a French Bal Tosfos who was living in England. So we have France, and by extension, across the channel to England. And going eastward, we have a center in Germany, and that spread south to Italy, and there were Bali Tosfos in Italy as well. The passages that we have in the Bali Tosfos, the Tosfos, printed Tosfos, so it's very important to understand that the printed Tosfos contains within it multiple layers from the different generations of Bali Tosfos. The Bali Tosfos spanned a period of around 150 years. We're going to get into some of the names in a few minutes of some of the prominent Bali Tosfos. But you have to realize that a passage that we have in Tosfos was edited generally at the end of the period of the Bali Tosfos. And contains multiple layers of different generations. There was the early layer, which was usually just a question on the sugya with one answer proposed by a Baal Tosfos, one of the Rebbeim, one of the great Tosfos leaders. He would ask a question and he would give an answer. That question then became the question on the sugya. Later generations would scrutinize the answer that was given, offer alternate answers, maybe bring a support. And eventually, an entire passage emerged that reflected the great brilliance of many generations working on that specific issue at hand. So we actually have in Kisvei Yad form, and some of them have been printed, copies of the early Tosfos. So for instance, there was a manuscript in a library in Moscow that was sealed off during the time of the USSR. And in 1994, when the USSR fell, so they started opening their libraries to the broader world. And Hebrew University immediately sent a team of scholars to go to the Moscow University and other universities in other cities as well to microfilm all of their Kisvei Yad. And all those Kisvei Yad are accessible. Many of them are accessible online today from the Hebrew University website. But you can also go to the Hebrew University microfilm room and you're able to see these Kisvei Yad. So a Ksav Yad was put out around 10 years ago called Tosfos Riazaken. It's a very, very early version of Tosfos, way before our Tosfos. And indeed, if you compare it to our Tosfos, so it is the skeleton of our Tosfos. It has often the original question and one answer. It's a short passage. When you start comparing it to our Tosfos, so our Tosfos has a question on the answer and then a support and then another alternate answer. But there are layers and layers to our Tosfosin. And eventually, as they spread to different regions, different collections of the Tosfos emerged in different regions. Our printed Tosfos were supposed to all come from the same collection. What was that collection? So in Germany, there lived a prominent rabbinic scholar named Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch. Eliezer of Tuch was a... He was a student of, probably a student of some of the, you know, we'll get to the generations in a second. Before I go into his lineage, Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch edited Tosfosin, even though he was from Germany, he edited Tosfosin from France, and those are our Tosfos, known as Tosfos Tuch. The first printer of the Gemara, the first complete Gemara was put out by a gentleman named Daniel Bamberg. I say gentleman named Daniel Bamberg because I've seen in many Sfarim, I've seen him quoted as Harav Daniel Bamberg. Daniel Bamberg was a Christian. He wasn't Jewish. His name is Bamberg because he's from Germany. It just sounds Jewish to us. But Daniel Bamberg is the first person to put out the full complete set of Shas. But before him, somebody else tried. They just didn't get the complete set out. But his name was Gershon Sansino, and he was Jewish. And the Sansino Gemaras that some of us studied for tests for it, but before there were art scrolls. So the Sansino Gemaras are named after Gershon Sansino. So Gershon Sansino writes that he searched for the Tosfos Tuch. He traveled all over Europe looking for the Tosfos Tuch because those are the best Tosfosin, he writes, on Shas, and he wanted to print them. In the end, he didn't find them on all the tractates, on all the Masechtos. The major Masechtos are from Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch. Bava Basra, Bava Metzia, Bava Kama, Ksubis, Gittin. The major Masechtos are from Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch, but there are many Masechtos that are printed from other Balei Tosfos. So for instance, Tosfos on Kiddushin that I just made reference to a minute ago is from the Tosfos of Evreux. Evreux is a city in Normandy in France. There was a yeshiva there. So they put out a Tosfos, Tosfos of Evreux. The Tosfosin on Sanhedrin and Makos come from the Tosfos of Rabbeinu Peretz, who was also from France, from the city of Corbeil in France. And he also put out Tosfosin. So our Tosfosin that we have on Shas are a collection of random different Tosfosin. Many times they're consistent, but many times they argue with each other. So, and the early Rishonim were aware of this. In fact, even some of the great Achronim write this all the time. Rabbi Kiva Eger in the beginning of Gittin writes about two Tosfosin on the same page. He writes that they argue with each other because they must reflect different Balei Tosfos. Many of our Tosfosin are anonymous. But if you look back at manuscript versions of Tosfos, So you'll see that many times the name is provided. So when our Tosfos just says V'yesh Lomar, in manuscript versions, it'll say V'omer Rabbeinu Tam. So we'll actually be able to figure out who are the different voices in Tosfos. So who are these Balei Tosfos? Now that we've spoken a little bit about what they've done, who are the major Balei Tosfos? So we'll mention just a few names because there were hundreds of them. But the major players were, number one, Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. There's one and two. Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashbam was the grandson of Rashi, the son of Rabbeinu Meir. Rashbam, Rav Shmuel Bar Ben Rav Meir. Rashbam. Rashbam was the oldest brother. He met Rashi, as he writes in his Perush on Chumash, that he told his grandfather that you tried to write a Perush on Al Pi Pshat, but you didn't do a good job, so I'm going to write a Perush Al Pi Pshat. And the Rashbam writes that his grandfather agreed with him. Now, we don't know when a grandfather agrees with a grandson who's telling him that, you know, you did it wrong, I'm going to do it right. We don't know if he was sincere. But the Rashbam was Rashi's oldest grandson. He had another grandson named Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Yaakov, Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam knew his older brother, the Rashbam, but he never saw Rashi. And Rabbeinu Tam is really seen as the forefather of the Balei Tosfos. When you see in Tosfos, Rabbeinu Shmuel quoted, so that's the Rashbam. The Rashbam is quoted all the time in Tosfos. Many, many anonymous Tosfos passages in our Tosfos come from Rabbeinu Tam. The oldest ones are anonymous because the name got lost over the generations. Rabbeinu Tam is really the father of the Balei Tosfos. Rabbeinu Tam had a nephew who really took the movement of the Balei Tosfos and took it to the next level, and that was the Ri Hazake, the Ri. When Tosfos quotes Omer Ri, the Ri was Rabbeinu Tam's nephew. It was his sister's child, and which means that he was also a grandson, great grandson of Rashi, the Ri. And we're told that the Ri had a yeshiva where each year they would study a masechta, like our yeshivas do today. And he had surrounding him 60 Talmidim. And each Talmud was an expert in a different masechta. So as the Ri would teach, if any of the students had a question on what was being learned from their masechta, they would ask. And by doing this and going through all the masechtas this way, by having all these experts in the different masechtos, so as they would go through the masechtos, that's how they would be able to make sure that whatever they were reading didn't contradict something in another location in Shas. The Ri Hazake was much more prolific in a certain sense than Rabbeinu Tam. Why? Because the Ri Hazaken had five primary Talmidim, and his Talmidim were the ones that spread his Torah to all corners of Europe. His Talmidim were the Rash Mishantz, Rabbeinu Shimshon of Shantz, city in France. His brother, known as the Ritzva, Rav Yitzchak ben Avram, they were brothers, the Rash Mishantz and the Ritzva. You know, the truth is, if you take a look at the sheet I gave you, so I prepared the sheet because I figured just throwing a lot of names. So here, if you take a look at the sheet that I gave, or if you're sitting near someone with the sheet, so we see Rabbeinu Gershon going down to the Yeshivos of Germania, of Germany. Rashi emerges. Rashi's son-in-law is Rabbeinu Meir, below him. Other Talmidim on the side, Rav Simcha Vitri, who is the Machzor Vitri. From Rabbeinu Meir, we have Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, primary student was his nephew, the Ri Hazaken. And you see, out of the Ri Hazaken, we have five primary Talmidim. The Ritzva, the Rash Mishantz, Rabbi Yehuda of Paris, Rabbeinu Baruch, and Rabbeinu Elchanan. Rabbeinu Elchanan was the Ri's son, who was tragically killed by crusaders. And our Tosfos that we have, yes, I should say, all of our Tosfosin basically come from one of these five students of the Ri. That is the main text of all of our Tosfosin. I know I mentioned a few minutes ago that it was Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch. But Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch was the editor. And this, now that we have the names, this allows us to identify three stages in the Balei Tosfos. We have the early Balei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Meir, the Rashbam, the Ri. That's the earliest version, or the earliest layer in our Tosfosin, right? We're going to break this down into three stages. That was the original questions emerged in their Batei Medrash. Then the Ri Hazaken students, these five students, they put the early layer to analysis. They added tremendously to that early layer. And what emerged from these students of the Ri are full collections of Tosfos. So for instance, we have something called Tosfos Shants. We have it printed today on many Masechtos. That is the Tosfos of Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri with the additions and analysis of the Rashmi Shants. The Rashmi Shants was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham. If you look in any set of Mishnayos on Zroim, on Taharos, in the back, in the classic printings, they have two commentaries on the side. The Reish Mem and the Reish Shin. The Reish Mem is the Rambam. The Reish Shin is the Rashmi Shants. The Rashmi Shants, his Tosfosim, became the foundation for Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch's work. And that brings us to the third stage. So the early stage, Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, the middle stage, the students of the Ri, then we get to the editors. And the editors stopped adding new material. They just took what was there from this middle generation and they edited, they cut out a few things. They took from different sources and spliced them together. They didn't add their own material. They spliced together material from different students of the Ri. And that's where our Tosfosim come from. So our Tosfosim, as I mentioned, on the major Masechtos, are called Tosfos Tuch, the Tosfos of Rabbi Ezer of Tuch. That means that they're really Tosfos Shants. Rabbi Ezer of Tuch worked with the Tosfos Shants, which themselves were based on the teachings of Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, and he edited them. So what's interesting is that Rabbi Ezer of Tuch is a German. Now, not only is he a German, he's not in the Rhineland, which is Western Germany. He's in Eastern Germany. He is editing the Tosfos Shants that are based on Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, and what emerges from his base medrash are the Tosfos Tuch, our Tosfosin on the major Masechtos. But there was also Tosfosin at the exact same time, edited by Rabbeinu Peretz in France. And that's French material being edited by a Frenchman. You would think that maybe Rabbeinu Peretz would be the more authentic or authoritative version. But that is why Sansino looked for a Tosfos Tuch. Tosfos Tuch were known as the most authoritative collection of the teachings of Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri. Now these names, I might be throwing out a lot of names at you, but when you read through later Rishonim, like the Maharik, for instance, Shuvos of the Maharik, he's constantly differentiating between these Tosfosim. I saw in the Tosfos Tuch, it says this, but in the Tosfos Shants, it says something else. And in the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, it says something else. The Rush, the famous Rishon, the Rush actually wrote a tshuva, and he wrote to his students, don't study the Tosfos and the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, because a lot of them were edited by his students, and they didn't do such a great job. The Tosfos Tuch, those were edited by Rabbi Eliezer himself. Make sure you study those. So we have, you know, today, nowadays, we just say, oh, Tosfos. But I hope I'm showing you that Tosfos is a whole world of Balei Tosfos. With these 6 minutes, I want to just talk about what happened to the Tosfosim. So I think there are three avenues. I'll mention them very quickly. What happened after the Balei Tosfos finished their tremendous work? So the first place that the Tosfosim went were onto the page of the Gemara. When the printing press came out, people started studying. Tosfos was printed on the page. The Maharal was not happy about that. The Maharal wanted the Rush to be printed on the page of the Gemara. But Tosfos is printed, and it became studying Gemara with Rashi and Tosfos. That's one place where the Balei Tosfos went. So they were frozen in time. Rabbi Ezer of Tuch lived in the 1200s. Rabbeinu Peretz lived in the 1200s. They were frozen at that moment, put on the page, and what we're studying today is exactly how it appeared in the 1200s. But there was also a further development of the Tosfos, and that was in the Beis Medrash of the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva. What I'm going to tell you right now, many people don't know, but it is such a perspective on all of those Rishonim. Many people don't realize that the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, all of those classic Rishonim saw themselves as the heirs of the Tosfos tradition. The Ramban writes in his Kuntres Dina de Garmi, he writes in the introduction that everything I'm doing is just trying to continue the work of the Balei Tosfos. Meaning, in Germany and in France, the Jews were either killed or expelled. And that was the end of the Tosafist movement. Some of the latest Tosafists were the the Maharam of Rutenberg, who was jailed for the last 7 years of his life, the Mordechai, who was killed in the Rheinfleisch massacre in 1298, the Rav Meir HaKohen, who was a student of the Maharam, also killed in 1298, the Rosh, who was a student of the Maharam, who fled Germany because of all this persecution and ran to Spain. Life in Germany and France ended. So what would happen to the Tosfos movement? So I already told you that for us, it was frozen on the page. But in Catalonia, in Spain, northern Spain, Catalonia, Barcelona, Girona, in these cities, the Ramban took up the mantle of the Tosafist teachings, and he continued to develop the Tosafist teachings. What do I mean by that? If you look in the Chidushei Ramban on most Masechtas, he asks the exact same question as Tosfos, but he gives a new answer. In general, they're not asking new questions, but they are continuing what the Baalei Tosfos did, giving alternate answers, alternate perspectives. And it's interesting that the Rashba and the Ramban quote the Baalei Tosfos all the time. Now, maybe I'll end with this. There's so much more to say, but maybe I'll end with this point. I checked in Maseches Bava Basra. Only 25% of the time that the Rashba or the Ramban quotes Tosfos does it appear in our Tosfos. Which tells you that the Ramban and the Rashba were using different collections of the Tosfos than what we had today, than what we have today. So I guess we'll end with two avenues. One avenue is that the Tosfos were frozen in time. It was a certain snapshot of the Tosfos tradition, and that's what we study on the page. The Ramban, working with a slightly different version, 75% of the time it's the same as ours, he had different teachings of the Baalei Tosfos, and he continued it. And he passing on to his student, the Rashba and the Ra'ah, and their student, the Ritva, and eventually the Ran and the Nemuke Yosef, were the end of the Catalonian-based Medrash. I say Catalonian specifically because Sfard is the Rambam. The Rambam is in southern Spain under Muslim rule. Catalonia is Christian, and it's a whole different empire. It's a whole different community, different culture. But Catalonia was the continuation. So, Mirtz Hashem, with the few minutes that we had, hopefully we gained a little bit more of appreciation for the Tosafist movement. And I hope that whetted your appetite to read more and to find out more about the Baalei Tosafist. Okay, everyone have a great evening. And